And that was George Gershwin playing George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, which is an introduction to a visit with Susanna Nason, who has played Rhapsody in Blue on the big stage in Radio City Music Hall in New York City. And she's here visiting me for the holidays. She's an old friend. And we met first many years ago at the New York State Council on the Arts. And when she was in her heart really a pianist and a performer and working behind a desk at that time. So welcome, Sue.
Thank you, Ellen. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for asking me.
Well, we're going to have a little conversation today, and Tom is going to join in, I hope, about Sue's 28 years playing in the orchestra at Radio City Music Hall, playing the piano, I should say. So, where to start?
Good question. I learned about this from a friend I'd gone to school with in California. She introduced me to Elman Anderson, who had just been appointed one of the two conductors for the new Radio City after they rescued it from the Wreckers Ball, supposedly. And she said, he'll call you. And so I waited and waited, and the contractor from Radio City called me up. His name was Bob Swan. He had been a percussionist in the orchestra, wonderful musician, wonderful guy.
And the contractor is the person who hires
all the musicians.
Musicians.
In charge of the musicians. He said, can you come down and play for us? I said, sure. I was just flabbergasted. I said, what shall I prepare? He said, anything you're comfortable with. So I prepared a movement, well, some from the Schumann Piano Concerto. I did a Gershwin arrangement of one of the Gershwin tunes. And then off I went to Radio City to audition for these guys and played for them. And they said, can you do the show? I said, yes.
And you were one of two pianists in
yes.
the orchestra.
Yes.
And this was in what, 1979.
When the new regime opened, the hall had been saved, and they had brought in Robert Yanni from California, head of Disney Productions, to be in charge, and mm-hmm. he was fabulous. And the next thing to say, I was so excited that even by opening night, and we'd been rehearsing for weeks, I thought I was going to have a heart attack as that elevator went up into the audience. David Rockefeller had welcomed all the people there. Roberta Peters had sung the Star Spangled Banner. And here the orchestra was going up into the theater. I said, if I find this is all a dream, I won't be surprised. It was just so amazing.
I think I was there at your first night, but Tom, have you ever been to Radio City Music Hall and seen the big show?
I haven't, actually. I don't know how that happened all those years.
Well, you and I'm sure your daughter Echo would love it.
Soon, yes. We will be bringing her to maybe see the Rockettes soon.
Right. But I grew up in Broome County in upstate New York, a little further west of here. And the big thing was you would go to New York, stand in line to get a ticket. It was all this mystique about the Rockettes and Radio City Music Hall. And at that time, they always played a movie.
Yes.
And then this huge, spectacular show with the big organ. And the interesting thing about it is that this orchestra would rise miraculously from the basement someplace, from the bowels of Radio City, and emerge. And it was quite splendid. And there was Sue wearing this long white gown, all coiffed and beautiful, playing. We were very excited.
It was an exciting time.
Now, how many stages and elevators are there on that stage?
The stage has three elevators. which can go down, which can go up, which can lock together, and they can all, of course, move because the stage can rise. And then the orchestra has its own elevator in the pit, so that makes four elevators. And you have to be very, very careful. They have to be very careful on stage when the elevators are down so that people are aware of that. But the orchestra elevator would rise, we'd come to stage level, and then usually we'd move back to the rear of the stage and then up on the third elevator where we'd stay for a long time while we played and the show went on.
Did anyone, did they ever have accidents with the stage? Did anybody ever fall off the stage?
We lost a stagehand who fell when he didn't realize the elevator was down, and it was horrible. I don't think anybody saw it. It may have taken place at a time. The orchestra never saw it. But it was a real, very real danger. And other people, one man had gotten his foot caught.
I thought, did you say a rocket fell off once?
Well, I heard this. I'm not sure when it happened. But in the old days, there was this place out front, in front of the orchestra elevator.
Like the apron? An apron?
Thank you. And the rockets would go out there. It was rather a thin piece of floor on which to dance, but they would do one last fling with their kicks and everything. And it was when this happened, they were out there, that something happened. And a rocket fell into the pit and landed on a player and his viol.
did the rocket, the player, and
who got the worst of that? Yes.
I think the viola got the worst of that. The rest of them lived to tell the tale.
Well, that's good.
And are the rocket and the viola player still friends?
Oh, this was some time ago. I'm sure they are. They were. It's a very tight company.
Well, you played both the Christmas show and the Easter show, right?
At that time, well, I joined when they had a summer show.
Ah.
And a Christmas show and an Easter show.
So you worked sort of all year long.
Yes. Yes. The summer show ran for 3 months, and the Easter show would be a couple of weeks, and then the Christmas show would run, golly, I'm trying to think, Thanksgiving anyway. Through, well, it was 10 weeks through the first of the year.
And how many shows a day did you perform at the height of the Christmas show, for example?
I would do 5 a day.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
They put on 6, but I knew my limits and I wanted to live to play another day. But one gal would come in from out of town and she would just do the hard weekend time, so she'd make all the money and then she could go home to her family.
It was 6 shows on Saturday and Sunday?
Well, Friday, I think maybe Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and she would do these 3 and then go home. But I knew I couldn't do that, and I wanted to do as many as I could during the week, so I rationed myself.
And how long were the shows?
90 minutes.
And then did you get time off in between?
Oh, sure.
How?
I think it would run 10 in the morning, 12, 2, that's 3, 5, 8, and then maybe 10. I think they switched it to 7:30, so it was just 2.5 hours in between to accommodate the 6. But the 10 p.m. would be the last show at night.
That was the tough show.
That's a killer.
Wow.
Yeah. But and people did it.
But you could actually go outside the theater and see the light of day or the stars at night.
Oh, sure.
Wow.
They have to do that.
And I'm guessing that, but you describe some of the other injuries, but I'm guessing some of the Rockettes with that kind of grueling schedule, that there would be all kinds of leg injuries or something.
Well, they're very savvy. They know how to pace themselves. And I don't know that they suffered, because they'd had weeks of rehearsal. Most of them had done the show before. And they knew what was good for them and what isn't there. Those dancers, you know, they've been dancing all their lives.
Well, there's always this mystique about the Rockettes. I remember my mother would said once, and I found this really amusing. She said, I wonder how much those Rockettes get paid. Where this came from, I don't know, because my mother was not ever a dancer. I mean, my friend Wiley said, oh, that's because she wanted secretly to be a Rockette. I'm not sure about that, but and now they send them on the road.
Well, it's a little fuzzy because I heard that Los Angeles was going to have a dance, you know, was going to have a Christmas show. Chicago was going to have a Christmas show. Mexico City was going to have a Christmas show. And that place in Missouri, what's that that's non?
Branson, is that it?
Thank you. They were good. Well, they all developed their own companies. Our Rockettes didn't travel. The real Rockettes.
There were fake Rockettes out there.
Oh, there were, thousands of them. They're picking them off the streets to have a company. Ours couldn't do Christmas and travel,
right?
During Christmas. They did, from time to time. I'm sure they've gone to Branson, and I'm sure they've traveled. But all these Christmas companies that somehow just surfaced at the same time.
Is there a Rockette college that you have to go to learn to kick or something?
Well,
like
not
Clown
really.
College, is there a Santa College probably?
Well, if you're chosen in New York, you go to Radio City and you start your rehearsals, and they tell you how and when and what, and it's precision, as you know. And one time, something was wrong with the elevator. And the Rockettes were supposed to do something, but they all communicated as a body not to go ahead and do it. There was this extracurricular thing going on that they thought as one body, so that they didn't, because there was something, the stage wasn't working right, or they would just kind of know what to do. It was amazing. They knew the theater, they knew the stage, they knew each other, they knew their routines, it was amazing.
Were there Rockettes that that you worked with that graduated to bigger things later, or was it a stepping stone to other?
Well, it depends on the dancer. When I was there, most of them had been there and made that their main career, so that when they left, many of them went into teaching, and many of them went into opening their own school, dance schools, not Rockette schools. And then some did it for a while and went off and did something else. And, of course, they got married. But they have a huge Rockette Alumni Association. And sometimes they would come and just be on the stage for the audience to see. And it was fun, and it was thrilling. And they'd all wave, and just a real sense of this togetherness for all of the Rockettes.
Let's take a little break on that note. We'll be right back.
A haunting refrain, a pretty girl
Okay, we're back. While we were listening to that wonderful song, evocative of the Rockettes, we were chatting a little bit about the changes that have taken place at Radio City during Sue's tenure there. And you started to tell us about the first show that Bob Yanni put together after the building was restored.
Well, we had the opening show, which was this wonderful three-month show called Summer New York, New York Summer. And that was the tale of an older woman who'd been to Radio City in her youth, and she was bringing her husband and child back. And that was lots of fun because it told everybody about New York, and it was a big tourist attraction. And at the end, there was a tribute to the Statue of Liberty. And on the first day off, I said, I'm going to take my son and a friend, and we're going to go to the Statue of Liberty. And everybody in the dressing room groaned. You're not. I said, yes, we are. That was fun.
They'd had enough of the Statue of Liberty by then.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Those were... but your question, what I found interesting was the first Christmas show that Bob Yanni put together, he of Disney. And it was Christmas traditions. And we did, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. We did that whole letter. We did the origins of the Yule log. Mm-hmm. We did the show contained a piece on Scrooge. And then, of course, we did the March of the Wooden Soldiers, which is the Rockettes' signature piece. But we did all of these traditions of Christmas, including the lighting of a giant menorah on stage.
Which isn't quite a tradition of Christmas, but it's...
No, but it seems to occur at the same time.
Yes,
but all of these things. And I thought it was a wonderful show. And then another of the Christmas traditions was Santa Claus, and he was brought in. And then the next tradition came in, and the next tradition, and the next tradition. Well, the last time I went to see the show, Santa Claus opened the show. Santa Claus introduced everybody. Santa Claus took the kids on this ride. Santa Claus introduced the nativity, which is the end of the show. Not so. Santa Claus came back after the nativity, brought back the Rockettes, brought back the singer. And I thought, wow.
Santa Claus.
Yeah.
The MC.
Santa Claus special, spectacular. So that's why things have changed. But
well, maybe they saved money that way by having him do a number of roles.
Well, he's a terrific Santa Claus, and he's been Santa Claus for something like 25 or 30 years. And a story is that his kids went to school, and the teacher said, now we're going to talk about what our parents do. And the little girl got up and said, my daddy is Santa Claus. And the teacher said, oh, yes, dear, but your daddy can't be Santa Claus. Yes, he is. My daddy is Santa Claus. So she called the home, and the mother answered, said, your daughter said that her father was Santa Claus. And the mother said, she's right. He's Santa Claus at Radio City every Christmas. And he is, and he was. He's amazing. He's larger than life, but he's a wonderful Santa Claus.
So wonderful for all you Santa children Claus. Out there, yes, there is a Santa Claus.
Definitely is a Santa
Virginia
Claus.
Virginia and in other states.
Right, right. Well, the orchestra at Radio City is a unionized orchestra,
oh, yes.
Of course.
Oh, yes.
Because you hear stories about the Broadway orchestras where violinists are paid to sit there and not play. I mean, there's something about there have to be a certain number of musicians hired in a Broadway orchestra. At least that was the myth a number of years ago. And since they didn't need violinists, they were just being paid for doing nothing. Mm-hmm. Did that sort of thing happen at Radio City?
Oh, I don't think so. They had wonderful orchestrators, And they would use everything that they had, you know, all the instruments they had. And everyone on every chair was an expert, really. And they used the orchestra, and they were very proud of the orchestra. And
but did it change through the years? Did it get smaller? Or
the numbers didn't change. Well, I suppose from 1932 they changed. They opened with something like 10 double basses. Now, and when I got there, they had three. Now they've had one for at least 10 years, just one double bass.
1932 is when the hall opened?
When the hall opened. And when I got there in 1979, we had a bass player who had opened the hall in 1932. He was still playing with us. Great guy named Sam Kosha. Big guy. Eventually moved to Florida and played down there. But that was a big adventure for me, that this guy who had opened the hall was still playing in our orchestra.
But the orchestra still has the same number of players?
Yes, 36 players.
So if there used to be 11 bass players and now there's only one, what has taken the place of the 10 missing bass players, if I'm understanding this correctly?
Well, the attrition of the whole orchestra used to be bigger than 36. Mm-hmm. And I think that they, it may not be the volume or the size, but I think they still, there's a bass part, and it's heard.
But there are the same number of players in the orchestra, is that correct?
No, the orchestra used to be bigger.
Oh, that's
used to
what
be
I'm,
bigger.
I'm misunderstanding.
36 was coming down from something that was.
And is that all negotiated with the union every year, or?
Well, 36 is a given. The players, the union won't stand for a change in that.
Right. Right.
So that's set.
Well, so you finally decided to leave. I know that it was, I know the holidays were really hard for you. Aside from the hard work, the fact that it wasn't the usual holiday for you because you were probably working
that's right.
when you wished to be elsewhere often.
Yeah.
Did that play any decision in your, anything in the decision to leave? Or?
Well, Ellen, it was not my decision that I leave.
Or you might still be there today?
No, I don't think I'd still be there. But we had a contract that the tenured orchestra, which we were, was going to be dismantled. And after this 5-year contract expired, and they were going to do it 25% at a time. Well, came August of the year 2007, and I got a phone call from the president of the union saying, you are one of the 9 people that has been let go. My heart was not broken, but I was surprised. I just never thought I would be one of the people.
Did they cut back from 2 pianos to 1, or?
It had begun to be that I played the piano and the second keyboard player did the synth.
I see.
So now I understand there is a grand piano in the pit, but it is not a grand piano. It looks like a grand piano, and it's really a synthesizer. So that was something I was grateful for. I don't do synth, and I wasn't interested. So the times, they change.
Well, this has been a wonderful learning experience for me as to what happened. And is there anything else you want to tell us about your experience there?
Well, I'd just like to say some of the wonderful people that we worked with. Liza Minnelli, who was practically born there, Ann Miller, Liberace, I think he gave a show. Of course, he doesn't use piano players. I didn't play for his show, but I saw it. It wasn't long after that show that he died. And I think he knew he was very sick. But what a show that was. Oh, let's see. And, well, the wonderful conductors. We had a deal once we would play eight measures of something from Carmen, and then we would go into Begin the Beguine, and every eight measures it would shift. And we'd have a new conductor every night. And they were illustrious people. David Raskin, who wrote the tune Laura. I didn't even know he was still alive. People like this would come in and conduct. Look at this thing for about 5 seconds and then try to conduct this impossible thing. Everything from Wagner to, you know, rock and roll. So that was very memorable, too. They were great. And then Peter Allen did his own show. And he came up once and sat by me on the piano bench. And he said, forgive me, he said, I don't know how to play the piano. And he sits down and does something that the conductor asked him to illustrate. And I thought, wow, here's Peter Allen. What a great artist. And Johnny Mandel, who was a musician and wrote Up, Up and Away in My Beautiful Balloon. He came and sat by me on the bench once. He said, you know, I don't know how to play the piano either, but he, you know, they were so cute. But I'll never
These
forget
are
this.
Composers who don't play the piano.
Yes. So it's a great, great place, and it still is.
Well, it's a memorable experience to see that show. Tom, I hope you get to go there soon.
Right. Oh, do. I'll give you a tour.
All right, that sounds great.
Beware of all the animals. Aren't there camels and donkeys and all kinds of
And then we
sheep.
Had Roy and Serge and Roy, the two animal people with the lions and the tigers.
They were part of the Christmas show or some other show?
No, that was another.
I see.
Siegfried and Roy.
Right. Siegfried and
That's who they were. And they would take those cats for walks around the theater on all the different levels and all the different...
You mean backstage?
Backstage. And that was something to see. And
so aside from not falling off the band car, you also had to be... Beware of
tigers and bears.
Thank you so much. We've been here chatting with Susanna Nason, who for 28 years played the piano in the orchestra at Radio City Music Hall. Thank you so much.
Thanks for asking.
Come back to Hudson soon.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I get no kick from champagne. Mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. So tell me, why should it be true that I get a kick out of you? Some get a kick from cocaine. I'm sure that if I took even one sniff, that would bore me terrifically too. Yet I'll get a kick out of you. I get a kick every time I see it's clear to me you obviously don't adore me. I get no kick in a plane flying too high with some guy in the sky is my idea of nothing to do. Thank you. kick from champagne. Mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. So tell me, why should it be true that I get my kick out of you? Some get a kick from cocaine. I'm sure that if I took even one sniff, that would bore me terrifically too. Yeah, I get a kick out of you. I get a kick every time I see you standing there before me. I get a kick, though it's clear to me you obviously don't adore me. I get no kick in a plane, flying too high with some guy in the sky is my idea of nothing to do. Yet I get a kick, I get a kick, I get my kicks out of you.
WGXC 90.7 FM wants to help you say goodbye to 2011. Here's a small sample of New Year's Eve events in the Upper Hudson Valley. The Athens Fire Department will hold a dinner party with music and dancing starting 7 p.m. at the Athens Firehouse on 3rd Street. Call 518-928-4042 for reservations. Diva and the Dirty Boys will perform at the Bavarian Manor in Perling. For information, dial 518-622-3261. Mexican Radio in Hudson will feature DJ T-Bone and DJ Council, along with a photo booth. Call 518-828-7770 for more information and reservations. The New Year's Eve party at Slopes in Tannersville will feature DJ Doug Mara and MC Summer John. 518-589-5006 is their information number. At Club Helsinki in Hudson, the Felice Brothers and the Robots will send out the old year and ring in the new. Get details by calling 518-828-4800. And let us not forget Uncle Salty's New Year's Ball, going down at the Fernwood Restaurant on Malden Avenue in Palinville. For more info, 518-678-9332. Wishing everyone a happy and healthy new year from all of us at WGXC 90.7 FM ACRA, hands-on community radio in Greene and Columbia Counties.
Sleigh bells in the snow. of a white Christmas. With every Christmas card I buy, may your day be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases